Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information that will expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers.
Welcome to the Art of Network Engineering. I am AJ Murray at No Blinky Blinky. He is Dan at Howdy Packet. Dan, how you doing, Dan?
I'm tired, AJ.
After that conversation we just had, that's how you're going to start us off tonight.
Yep. Not going to lie. No, I'm good.
How about you? I appreciate your transparency in the matter. That's great.
Yeah.
What's got you so tired? You got that PC built yet?
I do. It's sitting right here. I'm on it.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, that was I use a NAS, so migrating files and all that stuff, I don't have to worry about that. But
nice.
I had to install all my software and all that stuff, and yep. It's
always a pain, man.
So, and then like in Premiere Pro, your projects, when you open it up on a new computer, now you have to go find all the files. And so I had to go back and basically locate it in the project.
Is that manual or does it do it for you?
Well, it somewhat, like, you tell it the folder to look in and then it'll find all the stuff in there. So it's not too bad, but it's just having to go through it kind of thing.
Right.
Especially if you have things in different folders. But no, it's that, and then weddings. It's wedding season.
It's wedding season. That's right.
Weddings.
That's right. Tomorrow is October 1st. So you're like entering prime wedding
Dan,
season.
Does this mean you're going to be handing off editing duty soon?
All right. I don't know. We'll see.
Let me know, man. I'm waiting.
Yeah. How you doing, AJ?
I'm doing well. It's been a weird day. I was up very late last night supporting cutover on a firewall. Things did not go as planned. We had to roll back, which is never fun. I hate admitting defeat, but I also don't want the customer stranded when it's time to start their business day. So we made that decision, rolled back, and did some testing, verified things were working as they should, and called it a morning.
Hey, AJ, when you say cut over, were you going from like an older to a newer version or different platforms?
So great question. This was a reconfiguration of an existing WAN. So I won't get into too many details, but the WAN, the current WAN setup they have is a little interesting, and we were trying to optimize it and make some good changes, because of some future stuff they have coming up. So and some problems they've been having with their current WAN design. Busy season is upon this particular customer, and to get this stuff straightened out before busy season starts is going to be key. What was particularly frustrating about this is that I always do my due diligence, and I had peer reviews done by tech support to verify my configurations were solid, and by a couple of different individuals. It was like, oh yeah, this looks good. Maybe tweak this over here, but this looks good. I think you're going to have a great night. And I didn't have a great night, and so I'm very frustrated. So it's okay though. We'll figure it out. We'll get it going, and we'll live to install another.
So how did you know it failed? Was it post validation, like just things weren't working, or it was blatantly obvious?
Yeah, critical services weren't coming up as they should have been, despite NAT rules and everything being in place. So yeah, we troubleshot for a little while. We gave it the old college try, and we just couldn't get those services to work like they were supposed to, and just decided it was time to roll back before the business day started.
I think we've all been in that position, AJ. At least I know I have. You got a big change, and everybody looks at it, including the vendor, and you think you're all good, and you even lab it up, and then you get in there and you push the button. You get that unexpected reason. That's why the post validation and that backup plan is so important, because you never know when you're going to run into that. Like, oh, okay, you know, and your back out was probably fine, right? You backed it out, everything was back up and everybody was happy, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Back out was great.
It happened.
I always do a backout plan, no matter what I'm doing. It could be the stupidest change in the world, but I'm going to have a backup plan, especially if I'm working at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I can't remember my name at 4 o'clock in the morning. And it's only two letters.
Doing this job at 2-3 in the morning is awful. So you better have that plan. Happens to the best of us, though, man. Happens all the time. Sorry to hear that.
Speaking of remembering names, he is at Andy Laptef, Andy at permitipandyandy.com. Andy, I know we've been talking for a little bit during the intro here, but how are you, sir?
I think I'm good. I'm drinking some caffeine. I got a maintenance window tonight. Drink it in my delicious Art of Network Engineering pint glass that I love. I feel smarter when I drink out of it.
That's a good glass.
It's a really good glass, man.
I don't know what it is, but beer tastes a little bit crisper in there.
It's filtered, even if it's not.
Yeah. I'm good, man. Not too much going on. In full transparency, I haven't studied for Encore since the last time we met for the podcast. And I told you, I just started studying. So here we are again. I've been working most nights. I've been very busy at work and working nights.
You have been doing a lot more nights lately, I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like more nights out of the week, you're like, I got another window. It's like, damn, dude, that's like your third one.
And it's not even, honestly, it's not even windows as much as just I can't get caught up during the day. You know, this might be a topic for another time, but I have so many calls during the day that it's very difficult to get scripts written and changes put in. So it just happens to be what's going on right now. And so I'm just like, you know, I'm trying to do stuff at night just to get caught up. You know, there's no calls at night. The kids are in bed. And so, I'm working more hours than I'd like to be. And I'm going to try to change that up a little bit. But, you know, I'm kind of with you guys. I'm a little tired. I've been putting in a lot of hours. I'm not really sleeping the way I should be. I'm getting like 6 hours a night, which really isn't enough for me. Up in the caffeine intake to keep up. So, you know, what happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like this stuff is cyclical. And right now it seems like the three of us are just, you know, kind of hanging in there, right?
Yeah, we'll survive. Yeah,
exactly.
Hanging on by
a thread. I'm good, man. Thanks for asking.
Of course. All right, let's jump into some wins. We got some good wins this week. Excellent. Thank you, Andy. At the top of the list tonight, IPv4. Chris, this is such a cool story. So Chris posted an article to his personal blog, and he got hit up by a VAR out of Oregon that was like, hey, we want you to come do some writing for us and, you know, maybe do some articles. And it's just like, whoa, that's cool.
I didn't see that.
So I've been talking to Chris a little bit this week.
Awesome.
And he's, you know, talking to them, trying to figure out how this is a little side adventure is going to work. But yeah,
that is awesome.
Congratulations, Chris.
How long has he been on this path, though? I'm trying to remember.
I feel like maybe a year or two.
Not long.
I think. Yeah.
That's just insane.
First introduced to him last year. I think it was because of the pandemic that he was kind of searching for a new career after, you know, being in culinary for so long.
I hope he never loses that hunger. Killing. He's one of those guys that I'm happy for, but at the same time, I'm like, really, dude, another win for you.
Yeah. You know, but well, then you're not going to like some of the other names on this list.
Keep them coming.
Network Drew accepted a new position as a sysadmin. Congratulations, Drew.
Nice.
Endemic. This is huge. Username Endemic in the Discord passed the service provider core exam from Cisco.
Oh, wow.
Congratulations. Ray 6221 passed the NSC 7. That's getting up there. The NSC 7.
What? I don't know. I was going to ask too.
That's the Fortinet NSC 7.
Okay.
So it's like networking security engineer or something like that. Yeah.
Very cool.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep.
I'm not big on Fortinet, so I'm not familiar with all their stuff.
Kyle Cleveland passed the JNCIA Junos. Congratulations.
Very nice.
Here's a name we don't see on this list very often.
Oh, God.
Adil Khan, recertified. It's F5 Big IP, sir. Yeah. Congratulations.
Hey, Adil. There you go. Man. I'm doing a F5 cutover tomorrow. Ah. So.
Nice. You should call Adil.
I should. I'm going to hit you up, Adil.
I think he'll be up around this time. We usually see, you know.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Adil. That's a big one. And I passed a little thing today, so I'm just gonna, you know, get myself a little pat on the back.
What do you know?
I passed the Juniper Certified Design Specialist and Service Provider.
Wait a minute. Nice. So, Service Provider Design is what you passed?
Service Provider Network Design with Juniper.
Bro, you are a beast.
Are you gonna go work for an ISP now?
No. No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
No, can you teach me service provider so I'm better at my job? is that a hard track? Like I need to get into a couple of service provider tracks, Juniper being one of them. Do you find service provider is more difficult than, you know, Encore enterprise stuff? Like,
yeah, I will, because I feel like the vast majority of the content that's out there is focused on enterprise networking, right. Whether that's Juniper or Cisco or any other vendor. Like the common core things of networking, your spanning tree, your routing protocols, your IGPs, BGP is really big, but you don't find a ton of IS to IS. You don't find a ton of MPLS, and you don't find a ton of like pseudo wire layer 2 VPN. Mm. Like you're getting off the beaten path of what's out there for content, you know, and I like to get practice exams, not dumps, practice exams. And there's just nothing available for that. Like I did 5 Juniper certs last summer and I was using the Junos Genius platform. Mm. And for a lot of their certifications, they have practice exams. They have content. There was some video-based content that I could watch for this course. It scratched the surface of what was covered on that exam. Mm. So it was watching the videos and reading a lot of Juniper white papers.
Okay.
To get through this one. So
They don't have like, you know, Boson XM for that stuff, or like Juniper doesn't have. Did the books have like the Ditkas and like testing built into the material?
I don't think Juniper has that. Like there's no certification manuals, at least that I've not seen.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, good on you, man. It wasn't an easy win and you got it.
It was not. It was not. And the worst part is that it was a required thing for work, right? Like, and today was the deadline.
So oh my gosh.
I'm not sure what would have happened if I hadn't passed that today. So I'm really glad that I did.
And you weren't planning on being up until 4 o'clock this morning on a crazy maintenance.
No. Yeah, I was
that's
not.
That's always the way.
I was not. I knew I had to work last night and I was like, I'll be fine. And then I was, you know, I was up until 4:30 and I was like at the customer location until 4:30. I didn't get home until 5.
How are you going to celebrate? So,
I am going to try to cut out of work early tomorrow.
Good.
Start my weekend early.
Good, man. Congrats. It's awesome.
So we'll see. New Patreons this week. There are no new Patreons to mention, but I just want to give a huge thank you to all of our Patreons for their continued support of what we do. We appreciate it so very much. If you're interested in joining the Patreon program, you can go to patreon.com/artofneteng. And check it out. Thank you so much, Patreons, for everything you do.
Big time.
To support us and what we do. Andy, can I get another goat scream? Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
I'm on it.
We can't let the intros finish without doing a little mention of our friends at NordVPN. So October is Cybersecurity Month, and we here at the Art of Network Engineering want to remind you to take your cybersecurity seriously. And you can do that with NordVPN. They also have some other products like NordPass. If you're looking for a password manager, NordPass and NordVPN can get bundled together. You can go to NordVPN.com/TAONE and you can save 73% on the 2-year plan for NordVPN plus 4 months free on top of that. And they will bundle the NordPass and the NordVPN together for even better discounts. So do yourself a favor, sign up, and take your cybersecurity seriously. And we thank our friends at NordVPN for their support of the Art of Network Engineering podcast. Okay, tonight we are talking about skills with a Z. Mm. Skills.
Do these skills help us pay the bills, AJ?
Yes, they do.
Thank goodness.
Yes, they do. Not the soft skills. We've talked about the soft skills a lot on the show. I think people know by now what soft skills are and why they need them. And I'm sure we'll talk about that again. So tonight, we wanted to talk about the skills that are not network engineering related that will help you in your network engineering job.
And with this, well, okay, keep going.
So, you know, things that come to mind are virtualization platforms, like having some familiarity with virtualization platforms, how to deploy a VM from scratch. Maybe you're deploying a virtual appliance, because those are all over the place. Like just being able to navigate around a hypervisor and do what you need to do will go an awful long way for you and your career. So skills like that. Is there anything, does that resonate with you guys? Are there other skills that you?
Yes. Oh yeah, definitely. During my, not my day to day, but in ACI, I have to go in and create the port groups for the virtual servers in VMware. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have to go in, create a port group, set up the VLAN, that kind of stuff. So I'm definitely in, what are they? I'm over here talking about, yeah. But what do they call it? Is it vSphere or is it vCenter? I always
great
forget.
Question. Yeah. Great question. Yeah. So
which one of them which? I have and one of them I don't, because you got to pay for one of them. That's all I know.
So
you can have it for 60 days, Andy. Or 90 days, whatever it is.
You can think of vSphere as like Windows, right? There's Windows Server. There's Windows Desktop. There's Windows, you know, built in. I forget what they call it, right? But it's like Windows embedded in IoT devices, right? So there's all these different flavors of Windows. Well, vSphere has some different flavors. There's vCenter and there's ESXi. ESXi is your hypervisor. That's a bare metal type one hypervisor that lives on your, you know, server hardware in your data center. And then there is vCenter, which is the centralized management function that will control all of your ESXi deployments within your data center. Or you can cluster them together and have certain workloads live on, you know, this vCenter and other workloads live on another vCenter, but you're not putting VMs on vCenter. vCenter is a management appliance that lets you see all of your ESX hosts clustered together. They could be clustered and sharing resources, or you could just have them all on.
Is that a controller?
A given data center.
Can you?
It's kind of like a controller. Like, it's not like an SDN controller. Right. You're not telling it like how you want your virtual environment to look like. You're managing your virtual environment from in
it's
there.
More management.
You're not setting up like, it's definitely more management.
Yeah. So, anyways, I go in that and I go over to the network tab and I create those port groups, and then I let the systems team know, you know, which port group to put on which server, kind of thing. I get in there, you know, probably once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks or so. But it helps knowing a little bit about it, you know, because like in my lab, I set up ESXi, and going through that motion, it's definitely something I think you should do.
Yeah.
That way you can at least say you've done it once and you understand, like when someone says data store, you know, you'll know what that is if you have to set this up.
Right. Right.
So
I think that if you're entering the IT world, you should definitely become familiar with hypervisors and virtualization, because that can help you a lot in your learning. Like you can virtualize if anything that you want to learn, right? Like there's virtual offerings from Cisco if you want to learn Cisco routers and switches. There's virtual offerings from Juniper if you want to do the same there. If you just want to learn Linux and build yourself a dev environment that you can explode and rebuild, whatever, you can do that in a virtual environment. There's hypervisors that you pay for. There's hypervisors you can get for free. There's so much stuff available out there that, you know, there's free versions of ESXi you can put on just about any piece of hardware built since like 2007, and it'll work just fine.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's one thing that's nice about ESXi is it's really compatible with a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So if you can find some old hardware, you can usually get it to run on there.
Yeah. One of my favorite lab machines that I run some light workloads on, like my Ansible system, it's an old CAD workstation that I got from, you know, a place that I used to work, and it works just fine for virtualizing light workloads. Like I've spun up a domain controller real quick. I've put, you know, Cisco ICE on another virtual environment and connected the two together so I could authenticate AD credentials when I was, you know, setting up TACAX or something like that. It's real easy to do.
Gotcha. Now, do you have any experience with Hyper-V? I have zero experience with Hyper-V.
I have used Hyper-V.
Is that the one on Windows?
I do want to address
like the Type 2 hypervisor.
Yeah, that's Microsoft. Yep. Yep. So Jordan in the chat is asking about Type 1 versus Type 2.
Great question.
So do you guys know the difference?
Well, Type 1 lives on bare metal, right? And Type 2 is an abstraction. Exactly. It's like a VM within an operating system or something, right?
Exactly. So your hypervisor is like a compute traffic cop. You're going to direct resources to certain VMs. That's how you allocate, you know, memory, CPU, storage to a VM is using your hypervisor. The Type 1, as Andy said, lives on bare metal. Type 2 lives on top of an operating system. So if you're familiar with VMware Fusion, VMware Workstation, what was the OpenBox, I think is the name of one.
Hyper-V. What's that other one?
Yep. So Hyper-V, there's actually two versions of Hyper-V. Okay. There's a Type 1 and a Type 2. You can have Hyper-V on Windows Server OS, and you can also have Hyper-V bare metal.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yep. You can get a version of Windows Server that just is Hyper-V that you install in bare metal.
I got you. Now, have you actually deployed Hyper-V or?
I have.
Okay. I have it at home. I may or may not run a VM in there that may or may not do things to download things.
Oh, okay. I got you. Say no more.
He's probably said too much already.
Yes. So, I'm trying to be funny. I read a blog about how you could do Hyper-V Manager and create. No, but it's, you know, it's an isolated environment. So, like, I can do dumb stuff within that environment. And if it blows that environment up, it doesn't hit my main Windows 10 host that I'm on right now. So, it's, you know, it's a place you can go in and blow stuff up. What's the advantage? I used to know this. And you're our server guy, right, AJ? Like, you're the VMware expert guy.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Out of us. So why is a Type 1 hypervisor better than a Type 2? What's the advantage?
It's probably whatever your use case is, right? Yeah, I would really say, like I would not want to run a data center on a Type 2 hypervisor.
Right.
That would be a good video. Let's try that.
but why? But and I don't know if we have that technical knowledge, but Type 1, isn't it because it has direct access to the physical hardware? Yeah,
it's definitely closer to the IO. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Right. Whereas like, you know, the hypervisor is talking to the operating system or there's doing like some sort of pass through there,
like a copy of a copy. You're not directly accessing resources. Because
like you have to allocate resources to run the operating system, and then whatever's left over, you can allocate. Yeah. To
like Hyper-V Manager, I'm running on my PC, has to then talk to the Windows 10 operating system to then get to the hardware.
Right.
Well, but then your Windows 10 is also taking up resources from the hardware.
Right. Right. Yep. So you're not. So, yeah. All like yeah. So on my server, right? I have ESXi on there, the Type 1 hypervisor, and it's just. It's directly accessing those resources. There isn't this other operating system, like you're saying, and like Windows 10, that's consuming resources on that box. And then, you know, that you're subtracting, there's a net loss there. Of the hardware.
Plus like Adil just brought up a good point too. Yeah. If your Windows 10, you know, just decides, hey, I want to update all out of the middle of nowhere. Now your Type 2's, it's going to be hurting now.
Yeah. Like the Type 2 is an application you install on an operating system. The Type 1 is an OS, but what's nice about that is it just lives in Flash. Mm. So you can reinstall and still have all of your settings there.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Huh. Yep. All your VMs are still there. All your storage can still be there. If you want to reinstall it fresh and then just pull everything back in, or if you need to upgrade, It just lives on flash storage, and then it pulls into memory, and it's a really light workload compared to everything else it's doing that lives in memory.
Now, one thing too, Adil is mentioning KVM. What is that? The Linux,
Linux KVM. I think that's really common in AWS. I think a lot of the workloads you run in AWS, and maybe other maybe GCP and Azure. I think obviously supports a lot more Microsoft stuff, but KVM. I believe is primarily what's supported in AWS and stuff.
Okay, but gotcha.
That is a Jordan hip fire from me on that one.
Jordan in the chat mentioned VirtualBox, so that was that'll kick me off. I got.
Oh yeah, that's right. I said OpenBox.
Yeah, earlier, but that's VirtualBox, what right. That's so the one I got a quick virtualization story of how I got into it, and it made me a better network engineer later. Right, this whole topic we're talking about. So I don't know when. Or if it's an article or Jeremy or whoever, but somebody said that, you know, the more I've been working in data centers a long time, and I remember them saying, and even if you're not in a data center, but if you're a network engineer, the more you can learn about the systems that are utilizing that network, the better you'll become. And I've always toyed with like being an architect someday, which again, always makes me giggle because I don't know if I'll ever be at that level. But I wanted to learn more and more about the systems utilizing the network, because I've been on plenty of calls at work with application folks or firewall folks or storage folks, like people having problems when I'm on call. And if I know about their systems and can sit in their seat for a little bit and see the interaction between those systems and the network, it will make me a better network engineer. So anyway, I got into virtualization via Oracle Box. It was the free, you know, I put it on my Mac and I forget what I spun up. Might even been GNS, but that was my first foray into it. And then I learned about the type ones and I got fortunate to get a server at work. And long story short, I got ESXi installed on that. And that's where my stuff lives now. The, you know, GNS and Eve and all that good lab stuff at home. But through going through all of that just at home in my studies in my home lab, one day I was on call and I got called in to a problem with our UCS chassis. And had I not spent hours and hours and hours building my own virtualization environment at home and building VMs and all that stuff, I was the person on the WAN team that they called, and I was the only one on the team who knew what the hell he was talking about with servers, because I have it running at home and I know how to get in there and I know what to look for and I'm familiar with the environment. I know how to allocate resources. And what had happened is we had a UCS reboot. There was a problem on the motherboard that got swapped, but we had a problem and it rebooted. And when it came back up, the VMs didn't come back up, and we had CSRs running on there, running prod traffic, and they wouldn't come back up. Mm-hmm. So it was an extended outage as everybody's trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And they call me and we get it back up. But then what I found, again, because of doing this stuff at home, is, you know, why didn't they come back up? And I knew where to look.
Right.
And it was that auto on, I forget what the exact term is, but there's a setting for the VMs to come back up on their own after a timer delay, you know, in a reboot or a power loss. And
like auto start.
Exactly. Yeah. So because someone told me, the more systems you learn that you're utilizing your network, the better. It got me into virtualization, got in for free type two, got a server, got into type one, learned all that stuff. And then in prod, I was able to navigate an ESXi and into the VMs and figure out what to do, how to get them up, look in the log, what happened, and then prevent this. The biggest thing, right, is preventing it from happening again. Like, guys, we need to provision. Right. And we had two pair in two different data centers, you know, active backup, and none of them had auto on provision. It's just whoever stood these up didn't know or whatever.
Just didn't do it.
Yeah. So we might have avoided another problem like that in the other data center in the future because I went in and got those, you know, configured too. So just
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's my little virtualization story. Came in handy for sure.
Yeah. So in the chat, it looks like a lot of people were talking about AD. Do we want to shift gears into that?
Active Directory. I love Active Directory. So I have been a Windows person for a very long time. I have worked in a Windows environment just about every place that I've worked. In fact, I think every place that I've worked, I've managed Active Directory and Windows Server workloads. So, and it's something that I teach at college for college students. So it's something very near and dear to my heart. And I will agree, like, Active Directory is in use by, I think, just about every single one of the Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies out there. And so having a good understanding of Active Directory and how it works, it's basically the authentication piece as well as other things, centralized group policy as well. But being able to wrap your head around that and understanding how it works, because there's lots of things that network engineers touch that interact with Active Directory, and whether that's like RADIUS, 802.1x, TACX, the Active Directory can be a source of authentication for all of those. So understanding how that works, you know, just deploying Windows Server, because there's lots of different workloads that, you know, you might utilize as a network admin that you'll want to run on a Windows Server or something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think one thing, too, is like there's a couple of tools that I would also recommend if you can get your hands on them. You know, I know everybody's environments are different. Not everybody can see other people's systems per se, But like where I work, I can get in and look at like OU groups, and I can look at DNS, I can look at DHCP pools and stuff like that. Like if you guys aren't running DHCP server like on your routers and whatnot, if you actually have a Microsoft server that's running the DHCP, they've got what I mean, I guess their tools are just called that, right? Like DNS and DHCP.
DNS management.
Yeah. So, but you can run those and it'll query those servers. And, I'd highly recommend just peeking around in there. Mm-hmm. You don't have to make any changes or anything. definitely. Well, it's good to see like what, cause sometimes like I'll have a developer reach out to me and say, hey, I'm not able to hit this, or, hey, I'm trying to hit this. And it's like, they give me a DNS entry. Well, you know, you can easily ping a DNS entry and it'll show you what the IP is. But I also like getting in there just to make sure, because sometimes they've got, what is it? The aliases and stuff like that. So this DNS entry might point to another DNS entry that might actually point to the real IP address.
Right.
You know, I don't know, just things like that. Being able to go in there and see that for yourself, it's very nice.
Yep. Absolutely.
So could we take just a quick step back, and if you could briefly explain, AJ, what it is and why it's important. And the reason I'm asking is because I'm not exactly sure how Active Directory works. I could probably give some BS answer, but what I can tell you from my experience at work is when I try to access a resource, maybe a new tool or something,
right,
and I can authenticate to a point, but then I hit a wall, and then I usually have somebody... I'm missing in an AD group, right? Like I need to be added to some group for resources. Yeah. And then they'll ask me, well, do a whois/all. And I guess it gives you all the groups that I'm in, and then they can see if they need to add me or not. So like, I don't exactly understand my username, I guess, is on the Windows domain. And are the AD groups tied to permissions? And like, is there a high level, like you teach it? What's the high level? Yeah. Like, what's it doing? Yeah. Right.
So, Active Directory is like a multi-master environment. You have domain controllers, and think of that as like a phone book, right? That's going to have all of your users, all of your assets in a Windows domain live on domain controllers. You have multiple domain controllers, and they share all of this information back and forth. They synchronize with one another, and you can have domain controllers that live at different sites. And when users log in and authenticate, they will authenticate to their closest Active Directory domain controller if everything is set up correctly.
I'm sorry, did you say the domain controller is the phone book? Is that what that is? Okay. Yep. So all your people.
That's the database.
Here's our employees.
Everything lives in
there. Gotcha. Okay.
Yep. And so computers are people too. So if we have computers that are joined to a domain, those have passwords just like people do, but the people don't have to type in the computer's password. The computer just knows their password. And once in a while, the computer's password can come out of sync with Active Directory. And you have to like rejoin it to the domain. Basically, it's a real pain in the ass. Anyway, you have a user account object and you have user group objects. The best practice is to put users in groups and then assign permissions to groups.
Right.
So when Andy leaves the company that he works for and they hire Dan, they put Dan in the same groups that Andy had, and then Dan has the same permissions that Andy had.
And the permissions are resort, like access to whatever, like IPAM and whatever, so, like all the tools that you use. Okay.
Exactly. Right.
Or like if you're wanting to log into, you know, network devices and whatnot, you can have it set up either Radius or LDAP or, you know, whatever, that will query those groups. Right. And you can have it set up in Radius where like, hey, if this user name that, let's say I'm logging into a switch, right? If this username comes in and they're in this group, then allow the access basically.
Right.
And that's, but it's all because of AD, right?
Right.
It's all because of whatever your group that your username is.
Here's a goofy question. Do people hack like AD to try to elevate, like a hacker getting in, do they go in and try to mess around to like get elevated privileges? Or is that not even a thing you would do, like hack AD?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they hack AD, but you know they're probably trying to hack at administrator credentials.
I guess.
And so there's like lots of best practices, like you know, there's like default containers that come when you set up Active Directory and you just don't want to store anything in those default containers, because it's like having a user account called administrator, like, duh, no, people are going to guess that, right? So,
and is Active Directory a Windows thing?
Yeah, Active Directory specifically is a Windows thing. It uses LDAP, which is kind of more open open source. There's implementations of LDAP in Linux. Active Directory is the Microsoft implementation of LDAP.
Right.
Which is lightweight directory authentication.
But a protocol. Place that's like in love with Linux that doesn't want to run Windows, they have an equivalent AD something or another.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a real pain in the ass to get Linux LDAP to work with Microsoft's Active Directory.
Yeah, trust me. I know. Using Max on an AD domain.
It's a lot better than it used to be, I will say.
It sucks.
So I don't know how it necessarily makes us a better network engineer, but I can tell you that when I can't get to a resource, we have a guy on my team that knows how to do all that, and he gets me added to whatever I need. Yeah. So he's... It makes him a better network engineer to help me, you know, get access.
I think one thing that would make it nice is if you know which group, you know, you need access, you know, for like let's say I'm on my team, if a new network engineer comes in, right, and they're going to need access to all the same stuff that the rest of the network engineers need access to. Well, instead of bugging, you know, the systems team or something, I technically could go in there and just move him into that if I wanted to. Now, that could be considered a little bit of a shadow IT type thing, I think. But I think it depends on the size of your company, right? Because some companies are probably going to be like, no, network people cannot touch AD, right? Or no, programmers definitely don't need to be touching AD, or, you know, whatever the case may be.
Right. But, I just want to echo a sentiment that Jordan had from the chat that, you know, being able to speak the language of other teams goes miles and miles and miles. So any extra experience, you know, AD or whatever in that you can then use to communicate with your sysadmin teams, that will help out. But like he also said, don't expect them to understand networking and be able to articulate to you what the problem is when they come back. They'll just blame it on the network, and then you got to prove that it's not the network.
Everybody blames the network, right?
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
It's the joy of our job.
So what's the next non-networking skill? Dan, I think off mic, you were talking about just having a good understanding of SMTP.
Yeah. So like when you're configuring alerts and whatnot on your devices, whether it's your firewalls or anything really, having just a little bit of knowledge of SMTP is nice, because otherwise you're going to be bugging your systems team. Like, okay, what am I supposed to put in here? Like, so just a little bit. I don't think you have to like be an expert by any means, but you know, just so you can fill out those little.
So fields, what is SMTP? All I know is it's mail, right?
Yeah.
So mail transfer protocol.
Yeah. I think nailed that's it. Yeah.
But what does that do? Is that
that's the language that mail servers talk to communicate mail messages.
Right.
And then what about POP?
POP3 maybe.
And all that stuff?
That's not as common today, I don't think.
Is it not?
I forget what POP stood for.
What about, is IMAP? Is that another one?
IMAP, yep.
Yeah.
Dan's just throwing around acronyms.
I think that's more common with like Exchange and Exchange Active Sync used to be a big thing. I don't know if that still is.
So have you guys run into like SMTP problems, issues, like knowing about it helped?
I used to manage Exchange servers and
okay,
so that was your life.
Yeah.
I always, whenever I was trying to describe somebody what it was like to operate Exchange, I always told them it was like having a fancy foreign car. Like when it runs great, it purrs, it's awesome, it's really great to have Exchange, there's lots of cool features, most organizations don't even scratch the surface of what Exchange can do for you. But when it breaks, man, does it break. And then you got to find an expert to come in and help you like fix it and get it up running again. I think that landscape has changed a lot now that they've been able to like SaaSitize that, right? Like and put it in the Office 365 cloud. I think it operates, I don't know, a lot better in my opinion.
It's much nicer whenever it breaks. Exchange. You can just be like, it's the cloud.
Did you just make up a word, SaaSitize?
SaaSitize.
Yeah,
that was pretty good. better go copyright that. That was SaaSitize. So forgive my ignorance. So is Exchange just the thing that email works on? Like, Is that a piece of software, Exchange?
Exchange is Microsoft's flagship application for email.
Yeah. So even like Office 365.
Whereas Exchange is the server version of email. Outlook is your email client that talks to Exchange.
Right. So like even Office 365, there's Exchange running somewhere in the cloud that's managing all the email, send, receive, blah, blah, blah.
There's a cloud instance or cloud tenant of Exchange that's holding your mailboxes.
Little mailman guy in there, virtual mailman guy. Cliff.
Nice. Yeah. I like the image. Lotus Notes. Oh my God. I haven't heard that in forever. That was the IBM version of Exchange. Lotus Notes.
We used to have that.
What, wasn't it like same time at some point, or was that the IM client? I think that was instant messaging.
I don't remember the IM client for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Linux. Right. A lot of people in the chat are shouting out Linux. I couldn't agree more. So many appliances run on top of Linux. So many network operating systems are Linux based. So being able to navigate Linux for troubleshooting purposes and just knowing Linux in general is really going to help. I personally love to use Ubuntu. It's very easy. Been using it for years. I started on Fedora. And so there's like a little bit of Red Hat in there, but I couldn't agree more. Having some Linux experience is great. I don't think you need to go get like certified in Linux, but just knowing your way around and understanding how Linux works, especially compared to Windows, is going to help you out an awful lot. Mm.
I feel like at some point I do want to go get Linux certified, like Linux Plus or something like that.
Yeah.
Because I do struggle with Linux. I'm not going to lie. You've seen my pain with it. I'm just trying to put a static IP address on something one time. And it didn't go so well. It took a little bit longer than I would care to admit. But I think one thing for me with Linux is navigation. Once I started figuring out how to actually navigate through Linux, and we're talking about just an SSH client to a Linux box, right? Not a GUI or anything like that. Because Ubuntu does have a GUI version, but we're talking about, you know, just straight up command line basically with it. But learning how to navigate and where files and folders and all that stuff are, that was a big help.
It's so confusing when you first start out, like navigating that hierarchical file structure. So here's a shout out for Home Labs, right? And I mentioned this before, but I got a console server in my home lab back in the day, and it had Linux on it. It was an Avacent, you know, Cyclades, whatever. And I'm like, what the hell is this? I'd never seen Linux before. And it was a nightmare, and it took me forever. But it forced me to learn, like you're saying, Dan, how to navigate through that file structure and, PWD, where am I at? And LS, what are the options in here? And then CD, whatever, to change directory, and the .. space or whatever nonsense it is to jump back and I forget what it is. But now in my job, it comes in handy that, you know, our automation, one of our automation platforms, so you log into VS Code, which connect to these Linux boxes. And it's all like you're saying, it's all command line Linux. And I have to, you know, where am I? Where am I going? Mm-hmm. Where's my repo? Where do I got to go to get this template thing? And it'd be a nightmare if I didn't know the basics of just that, you know, file structure navigation. Well,
and another thing too is like when you have to edit a file, like I'm talking about like a text editor, right? And you use, you know, whatever I've forgotten what it is now, but it's like
Notepad Plus.
AJ, no. Do you remember?
That's what I use.
There's Vi, Vim, there's all.
Yeah, Vi. But
oh, the Linux text editors.
Anyways.
Yeah, okay. Good luck getting out of there once you get in.
Nano is the one I was thinking of. That's it, Jordan. But anyways, using their editor and then the spacing, because that's what it was, AJ. You remember when I was trying to put that IP address on there? Mm-hmm. Getting the spacing right was tricky. And so going through that, it did let me know that, hey, in the future, if I start running into weird issues like that, that's something I need to look at, right? Make sure I got my syntax right, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's weird editing a text document in an SSH client. I don't know. It just kind of blows my mind a little bit because you can't just hit save. You have to do some weird key combination or something.
Right.
You know,
that hurts my brain. I didn't even know that was a thing.
And just because you can navigate a little bit too, like, so I can navigate a little bit, but when you helped me, AJ, stand up, you know, Ubuntu on my home server so I could mess with some Ansible and stuff. Cause I don't know, man, I just could not figure out how to do that, you know, without you there. Mm. I mean, I learned something, but yeah, Linux seems really, go learn some Linux.
Yeah, and I'm by no means a Linux master, right? Like I've done it enough. I'm dangerous enough. Yeah. I'm not. There are far better, more worldly Linux people out there than I am. But it's definitely, I think, you know, a good skill to have to be able to do that. And yeah, I think just having a good, like, foundational knowledge of operating systems in general, like if I'm operating in Windows and I want to go, you know, manipulate something, I know where to go to do that. And I can do that either through the GUI or I can do it through the command line and just, you know, opening up MS-DOS and just navigating around, or PowerShell even, right? Like PowerShell is an awesome one, just to be able to navigate around and you know, make those changes, find what you need, will go a long way.
Yeah. And I think it also depends on, you know, the environment that you're in. Cause like where I work, we're mostly Windows. I mean, we have a few Linux boxes, but the majority is Windows. And so, I guess I don't have to run into that too much in my environment. Now when I'm doing lab stuff, because I mean, Linux is, for the most part, everything that we do that's free is running on Linux of some sort. So that's the most time that I run into Linux, me personally. Right. So, I know some places out there might be pretty heavy on Linux for their servers. Sure. So maybe Linux is more important to, you know, network engineers in those environments. Right. But, I think it's definitely something that we should all have a little bit of understanding of.
Absolutely.
Can I mention my favorite
one? Lots of appliances run off some mashup.
Your favorite one?
What was that? Sorry,
AJ. So can I mention my favorite non-network engineering skill? One I couldn't live without. Yeah. Let's Googling. Yeah. And let me, you know, I got a little bit of a story with that. In college, I took this class, Electronic Information Gathering. And this was, Dan's going to love this because it was way back in the day. But, you know, this was at a time before all of this technology and the internet and Google was it was just everywhere. Like, you know, the iPhone didn't exist, to give you a context into, you know, but so it was a,
did you have to go and check the, here we go. No, well, or
something? Yes. Wait, hold on a second. Let me pull gave it a layup, Dan. I laid it up there for you, buddy. You just slammed it down. Good job.
Hey, you mentioned I know, man.
It was meat on the bone. It was meat on the bone. I saw you salivating.
It's a twinkle.
But you know, that's the context. Is they had a class you could take at a university just to figure out how to find stuff on the internet. Like, that's how, it wasn't ubiquitous yet, where, like, of course you could do that. Everybody does it. But it really helped me later in life, even as a network engineer. You know, then it was more like LexisNexis databases, but it was a lot of like Boolean logic in the end and OR operators. And because, you know, the internet is all human knowledge of all time compiled. So to be able to parse all that and find what you're looking for specifically really comes in handy now, because, you know, you could Google something for network engineering and get 15 million, you know, responses, and it might not be what you're looking for. But I know I hear from most network engineers, you know, we're just good at Google, right? Like, that's kind of the running joke.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's invaluable.
Definitely. And I think learning like how to properly use Google, like how to, I don't know, as I'm struggling to phrase this, but how to figure out how to search things, right?
Yeah.
On Google. Oh yeah. Like, what are the right keywords to put in there, kind of thing? I think that's where the secret sauce is at, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, and just how, because you can like string stuff together. Like, if you really want to get specific, you can like put stuff in quotations and make sure that you're finding exactly what you're looking for, or add like plus signs in there, and you can use the advanced search functions, and that'll help narrow down and filter out your results. Like, there's a lot more to Google than just typing, you know, stuff into a bar right there.
Right. Well, and I think we can all agree, if you go to the second page of Google, then you've done something wrong. And so,
or else says copy and paste your error. That's always where you start. You know, what's the Windows event error ID? That's where we'll start.
Yeah, and then you just put Cisco in front of it.
Cisco iOS.
And in our industry specifically too, you know, you get some weird ass errors, maybe, you know, like you run into something, you're like, well, what the hell is that? Or you're looking in your log and you're like, dear God, I don't know what that is, but that timestamp correlates to the issue. And, you know, you can look that stuff up. Yeah. I mean, that's how I wind up running into like some bugs. I'll put this weird thing in that happened. And like you said, Dan, kind of figure out a way to word it to get what you're looking for. I'm like, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's a known bug. You need to upgrade. I'm like, ah, oh, hell.
I love typing in a description of the problem I'm having, and the first link that comes up is the Cisco bug database. It's like, oh, okay.
Nailed it.
Here we go. What version do I need to upgrade to?
Yeah.
That's a good one, Andy. Yeah, Google definitely for the win.
All right. I'm scrolling through on some other people's.
Oh, okay. I thought you were getting ready to share your own.
Let's see here.
Cloud was one. I don't know if you want to jump into that or not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good one. Yeah.
Yep. Cloud services in general. I have been a big fan of, you know, Google Apps and Office 365 for a long time. I'm very familiar with both those environments. I do some, you know, consulting on the side, and I manage various tenants of either for a few close friends, clients that have their own businesses and stuff like that. And, you know, I think that something like that was revolutionary. I mean, there was a point where you couldn't have your own business domain email unless you could afford Exchange, right? And Exchange was expensive. And so having those cloud services that let you point a domain to it, and, you know, Joe Schmo could have his own email domain and look like a professional business. And it was really just a big game changer, I think, having those services come along. So I've enjoyed, it's just like a personal interest of mine, like, playing around in Office 365 and learning all those services. Like, having come from a Microsoft background, it translates really easy to, you know, already knowing SharePoint and stuff like that and Office 365 services. So,
yeah.
But I don't know a ton of AWS, and I certainly don't know a whole lot about Google's cloud platform. At least their kind of server and services hosting. You know, I'm familiar with Google Apps and G Suite or whatever they're calling it today. Google Workspace, I think it's they're up to now.
So
how about you guys? Do you use any of those, like Azure, AWS, GCP?
Yeah, so I definitely use AWS and a little bit of Azure. AWS is more of their VPC, which I think is like their virtual private cloud or something like that. I'm probably butchering that, but the AWS people are like, no, he screwed it up. No, but I don't do much of the like instances and stuff like that, but I definitely like, you know the VPN side of it and whatnot. So
agreed. Andy, how about you? Do you cloud around at work?
Cloud? Do you even cloud, bro?
Yeah. So for, you know, my experience has just been the routing in and out, mostly with their, you know, with their gateways and building tunnels and stuff. We have got to be careful because I'm not supposed to say we do or we have that stuff with work, but, you know, there's like a cloud center of excellence or whatever they call it. Like, so, you know, one of the upsides, I guess, of being a huge organization and being semi siloed because there's so much going on is, you know, there's a cloud team, right? And they build all that connectivity because there's a lot of stuff that has to be built. Like, I don't have that kind of time to do it, has to be built. But you know, so I would run the routing in and out of our data centers to that environment. And then there's people who build, like you're saying, Dan, you know, the instances and I don't know what they're doing, but it's magical. And I did last year start Adrian Cantrell's AWS course, which I have a couple of buddies who work, you know, at AWS and some other cloud providers, and they said, man, this is like the best stuff. It's like $40. It's their whatever architect thing. But I was amazed as I took it. I probably got through the first, you know, few weeks of the just how much is going on and how dense it is. And, you know, and there's a ton of cloud jobs. And like, I mean, I know we're talking about, you know, skills, you know, in relation to network engineering, but like there's a lot of cloud network jobs out of there, you know, out there. And I even know some heavy hitters in the community who have like pivoted to cloud, like people who are studying for their CCIA and they're like, you know what? I'm going to do cloud instead. This is kind of where, and it's magical. I'll tell you that, you know, I build infrastructure and it takes a long time sometimes to get all that gear up and running and configured and go, you know, everything you got to do for applications to be able to ride it. And, you know, you can provision something in seconds. Remember talking to Cloud Bart, like, you know, literally seconds or a minute, like press some buttons, bing, bang, boom, and you can spin up as much capacity and compute and storage as you want on the fly. Like that's pretty magical, because it wasn't that long ago.
As much as you can pay for.
Like it's right. The sky's the limit. You know, you talk about like time to market, right? Like you got something new, you want to get out there quick. You know, a couple years ago, my old team, man, you're talking 3 to 6 months by the time you order all the crap and get it and get the circuits and configure it all and get the firewalls. It could take a really long time to get all that crap going in a big environment. Man, the cloud, bing, bang, boom. It's pretty awesome. Very fast, right?
I can spin up with them server jobs real quick.
circling back to the Google thing real quick. Somebody in here, I want to give them credit in the Discord. Through YouTube out there, which is, I'd say, right up there with, who was it here? Earl. Adjacent to Google is YouTube. Many times I've saved my bacon by finding a YouTube video configuring what I was doing. So I do that a lot, not only at work, but, you know, at home, like on a home project or something. Like, how the heck do I do this? YouTube is
right.
Googling something and reading a document's one thing. You got a video of somebody doing what you're trying to do, that's even better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Truth.
Another one that Earl just brought up was like layer one, knowing fiber, SFP types of fiber, all that stuff.
That's huge.
That's big, huge. Because one thing I see people struggle with is, and I think we talked about this in the Discord one night, but rolling fiber over, like it, I think people struggle with that because they don't realize that, you know, if you flip it on one side, you know, and then you got your two lasers hitting each other, you know, you're not getting anywhere. So right.
I wish they made those easier to flip. It's so hard to do with my big fingers.
Yeah. I have gotten actually pretty good at it. I get the little clip under one of my fingernails, and then you can twist that fiber out of there and just pop around.
I got a question. So why don't they, if you just labeled send and receive on each end of the fiber, right? You'd never have to roll. Your send on your A side would go to your receive on the B side. Like every time I stand up infrastructure, we wind up rolling fiber. And in my mind, if it was just labeled, that when they plugged it in, the send goes to the receive. Like, is it just because they don't label the send and receive fibers? Like, would that solve the problem?
I think it's because, like, I think the big thing is when you jump from one fiber to another fiber.
Mm. Yeah.
Like patch you go panels, through like a patch panel, right?
Yeah. Forgot about the patch panels.
Yeah. Because it's not the fiber that decides which is the send and receive. It's the transceiver itself that it's plugged into is what's shooting the laser
down. Does the transceiver, does the SFP have a send side and a receive side?
The transceiver does.
Right. So if you're looking at your SFP and you can see the send side, and then if you had a fiber that had an S, plug the S into the S. When you get to the patch panel, do the same.
I think the issue isn't the transceiver or the patch cables. It's the patch panel and where, you know, on one side in the building, it's wired as such. And on the other side, it's wired backwards.
Yeah.
You can't fix the cable there. So the only place that you can fix it is the patch cable.
That's
why it's easier to roll the patch cable. You can't do anything about how the transceiver is set up in the device. And you really can't do anything about how it's spliced at the patch panel. So the only place you can do anything is on one end of the patch cable.
And when do you guys decide to roll a fiber? What's the symptom? Like you're not, the interface obviously isn't coming
up. It's not working.
Yeah. Right. Like, but you're not receiving light either, right? Because there's like, sometimes I'm on and they're like, there's rolling this will do nothing. And I've never really, I just trust my ops people, but sometimes you're like, nah, rolling.
Sometimes you can actually like, I will in a very safe manner use my phone camera. And I'll cup the cable around and make it nice and dark, turn off the lights if I have to, and then like use my camera to shoot into, because the camera is a lot more light sensitive than my eyes are.
You can see.
And I don't want to look directly at a laser.
Yeah.
You can see right which side is lit, which side isn't.
Right. They tell you not to do that. Look right into it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I have these glasses. I'm like, yep, it's lit up.
But I run into that all the time. If you can be good with fiber, because I'm still not great with it, and there's so many different variations and the connectors and the modes and the nanometers. Yeah. I mean, it's a nightmare. Yeah. And you know, I tout myself as like a physical guy because I was a cable guy, but I never touched fiber. You know what I mean? So now that I'm like with data centers, every time I got to do fiber, I'm like, oh God, you know, what is it, OM4? Is it this? Is it LCSC? Is it multi-mode, single mode? Is it, you know, there's so many options.
Well, and I also want to point out, you know, we're talking about one single, you know, fiber cable. The traffic network, he was talking about 72 count fiber splits.
Right.
And it's less like, oh my God, that would give me anxiety right there.
I from a personal experience, I will say that knowing fiber plant is very, I don't know, critical as an IT person, because I once hired a contractor to come in and run fiber in a building. And I said, hey, for this project, we need to do 10 gig. And he's like, okay, cool. I know what you need. And I took him at face value. He goes out, he buys fiber, he comes in and he installs it. I was out of the office while he was installing it. I came back into the office, so excited to see my brand new fiber plant. And I find that it's OM1.
Oh, okay.
Now help me out. You now, can't get 10 gig on OM1?
You can't get 10. You can get 10 gig out of OM1 on short runs. Like apparently less than 100 feet, you could theoretically
but
get.
But that's not what you use for
10 gig.
10
but
gig.
That no, for what I needed in my application, I definitely needed at least OM3 or OM4. And so I had to go back to like the fiber plant guy and just like, hey, bro, where's my 10 gig? He's like, well, this is this is the stuff I install all the time. I'm like, God, I hope not. Like, that's you're screwing your customers over. This is what you're doing. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, it was unfortunate that like I had to like educate him on stuff. And, you know, it was he was super cool about it. We figured out, you know, how we were going to navigate through that. You know, and but yeah, it just definitely knowing fiber plant and understanding like what works where saved my bacon. So we've talked about an awful lot. I think we're coming up on our hour here. I think if we had to summarize, do you think there's like skills that maybe people should prioritize on or like out immediately outside the network engineering bubble? What would you think are some things that? Because I feel like this is kind of like a something that we could come back to and revisit, you know, once or twice a year and just be like, hey, given the market, these are things that, you know, you should focus on. I mean, obviously things we didn't talk about tonight were automation and scripting. That's obviously a big one. That's huge these days. And I think maybe at this point, I would just consider that part of the network engineering toolkit, not necessarily something considered outside the realm.
I'd like to just jump on that real quick. I know we're wrapping up, but if I understood coding and programming better, I would definitely be able to work with software folks, you know, more efficiently. I don't really interact with software folks, but when I work for a software company and when something has a problem, you know, there might be people on a call or something, like I don't know what they're talking about. And, you know, I'm just like, hey man, I got routes, I can ping, trace is good. Like, I don't know what to tell you. That I don't know what's wrong with your application, but the network's fine. But, you know, a network engineer working for a software company, I would imagine that it would be advantageous for me to be more knowledgeable, you know, about software. It's probably why they hire computer science people, right?
I can't wait for the day where I can blame it on shitty code.
What do you mean, wait for the day? I do that all the time.
But I hear,
but I don't know though, you know, you know what I mean? Like I have a good feeling, but
I hear heavy hitters say that all the time. Like fix your damn application. I guess, you know, they'll come to us saying something like, oh, well, we need like, nah, bro, go fix your application. Like if you know, I know there's been certain scenarios where if the network hiccups at all anywhere, an application falls over and dies and our architects will come back and be like, yeah, you know, if we can't lose a frame without your application falling over and dying, like you need to go, you can't keep saying it's the network. Like you need to, you know. and that's like a general statement, but I would say out of everything we covered, AJ, like I wrote them down: virtualization, AD, SMTP, Linux, Googling, YouTube, cloud, fiber. Like I would think if you had to pick one, Linux would probably be your biggest bang for the buck return on your investment. Everybody says learn Linux, and I run into it all the time, and all the Cisco boxes are running Linux, right? It's like the Linux kernel. Like there seems to be Linux everywhere. Like you said, Dan, all the server guys, what are you two giggling about? Yeah. Is there something happening I need to know about?
Cat came in.
There's giggling and typing and I'm trying to answer your question and it's very distracting. What's happening? Let me see your cat. Get your cat.
Come here.
What's your kitty's name?
Name's Kitty. Oh,
hi, Kitty. I had a
her name's Kitty.
I had a kitty growing up. I didn't even see her face.
Yeah,
hi, Kitty. Sorry for the listeners. Script Kitty, Eric said.
Yeah. Script Kitty.
Script Kitty. Yeah, there
I
you
think
go.
Any.
Oh, I love it. No, I want a new.
I think anything you learn, AJ, you know, as a network person. Circling back to what somebody told me early on, and I want to give Jeremy the credit because I did everything Jeremy Jarre told me to do early on, and it paid off. But the more you can learn about all the technology stacks traversing your network will make you a better network person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're an auto mechanic, you have to know every system in the car. You can't just be the brake guy or the transmission guy, right? Like, you need to know all the systems and how they work together. And that's,
I like that analogy.
Yeah. And that's what we're talking about here. You know, everything is traversing our networks and people are going to come to you with problems. And if you understand their stacks, you can at least communicate with them more effectively, and the better communication, the more likely it is you guys will find and, you know, be able to fix a problem. So any of them will help. If I had to pick one, I'd probably say Linux, because I run into it often and I could, you know, I'd like to be better at it, but I think it's low hanging fruit. Like, if you can learn Linux as a network engineer, it's definitely going to pay dividends, I think, because everybody's got some flavor of Linux running somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I think Windows AD.
Okay.
That's probably one I would say.
Yeah.
And it always depends on your environment, right? Like, I've never touched AD.
Oh yeah.
But for Dan, he can manage his own AD, right? So like, it's going to depend, I guess, like anything.
Yeah. I'd say for me as a professional services kind of deployment engineer, virtualization and knowing that has paid big dividends, because a lot of what I deploy is an appliance, right? Like, if I'm, you know, setting up stuff or pushing out something new, or usually deploying an appliance and standing stuff up, you know, and just being able to navigate around that really helps, you know. So everything seems to come as an appliance.
It does. And NFV is everything and everywhere. And if it's not where at, it will be. Everybody's going, you know, it's much cheaper to do that than the proprietary hardware tied to the software. You could just spin it up in a VM somewhere. Virtualization's huge. I mean, the CSRs, as an example, are, you know, basically a virtual appliance, right? It's a VM sitting somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, virtualization's big.
Awesome. Well, I think we did it.
Yay!
I think we got to the end of another episode.
If you heard us talking before the episode, you'd know how good we feel about this episode being good. Because, like, I don't know, man. It's been a tough week. See how this goes.
You know, it happens.
Yeah,
it happens.
We did good. Pulled it together.
Doing this is the one thing I look forward to doing every week. So I'm glad we hung in there, stuck it out, and we got to the end of another episode. Thank you so much to our Patreons. You guys make this stuff a whole lot more interesting than just the three of us chatting. If you're interested or considering being a Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/artofneteng and check it out. We appreciate your support, whether it's a Patreon or sharing us with a friend or colleague. If you find us in your podcatcher, you can leave us some feedback, rate us. That all really helps a whole lot. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week for another episode of The Art of Network Engineering. Have a great day. Hey everyone, this is AJ. If you like what you heard today, then make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Smash that bell icon to get notified of all of our future episodes. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Art of NetEng. That's Art of NETENG. You can also find us on the web at artofnetworkengineering.com, where we post all of our show notes. You can read blog articles from the co-hosts and guests, and also a lot more news and info from the networking world. Thanks for listening.